Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is World Forms and Fighting Champion John Chong, and you're listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneers Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, connecting the history one warrior at a time. Enjoy.
Well, aloha and mahalo, everybody, and welcome to another installment. We've been in your home every Tuesday night for the past 6 years with some really, really interesting shows. And tonight, I'm really excited. We have a Texas-based show, and we got some really cool Texas guests on. But before we start, I always bring on my producer, Mr. Jesse Bowen, with a few words to say. Auntie Bowen?
Hey, sir. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, sir? I appreciate your wisdom and some of the things you're involved with. So go ahead and share with us. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I appreciate it, sir. I appreciate that. You know, I was looking at our stats tonight. You know, we are moving towards 12,000 people that actually hit that play button. We've logged in, you know, over 300 plus hours. Of doing your show. So, you know, we have a lot of things to be excited about. We're very consistent. And, you know, so it's really been good. We've had a lot of things happen over this 6 years. We have released six books, biography books, some of the first, you know, in the martial arts. This year we featured Grandmaster Nars, and that was great. We're working on the second edition of that book, and we're doing that because we had a lot of people in his organization was not included, and we had some other things that we really wanted to do, but time ran out. The book, even on his Facebook page, has had over 7,000 likes, over 300 and some comments, you know, over 400 and some shares. And, you know, we're making a difference. Right now, we need to make a difference in the martial arts world by bringing something positive. And this is what we've done with the book. We've reached out and developed relationships in Latin America. They're going to start using some of our courses that we're using in our university and theirs. So it's all been very positive of an outreach of creating something extremely positive. So now we're very excited about that, sir.
Well, thank you again for your insight and your wisdom, and thank you for everything you've done, especially honoring Mr. Norris and Benny Akita, two great champions of American sport karate. So we have a great show tonight. And before we actually open up, I want to bring on Mr. Al Garza. Mr. Garza?
Yes, sir.
I would like to open up with prayer, please, for our country, for our history generals, for this program, and just for you, brother. I appreciate you so much. And we got a really great show tonight, but would you open up the show in prayer, please?
Absolutely. Thank you for the honor. Oh, Father God, we just pause a second and just to recognize your presence and to ask for your will to be done, Lord. And I just pray that your hand is upon us and that you would just help our country, Lord, help our country to have a countenance of love, joy, and peace, Lord, and that we would be an orderly country, that we would be patient and kind and good to one another, Lord. Lord, you command us to love one another, Lord, and to love our neighbor as ourselves, Lord. And I just thank you right now that we are able to open up this message with prayer today, this talk. And Lord, I just pray that we hear your voice and that we are able to speak your voice. And I just pray for the museum, Lord. I pray for all the athletes that have come through, all the martial artists that have come through and that are represented, Lord. And I just pray that you get 100% glory, Lord. I just pray that you get all the glory. And just be with Mr. Lee as he leads, guides, and directs us here, leading, Lord, and help him to always follow. Lord, I just thank you for this opportunity to pray for you, for our group here. So in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Amen. Al. That means so much. And don't go
sure.
nowhere, because I'm going to bring you up here in a few minutes. I got a bunch of people to try to introduce. And not any particular order. I'm going to introduce Mr. Jim Paskey, ex-fireman, ex-police officer, still karate instructor, he's been to the Paskey sidekick. We might talk about that a little bit later. But Jim Paskey works for Billy Smith. Well, he really doesn't work for Billy, but he teaches there, and he's a great guy. Hey, Jim, are you there?
I'm here on Pennsylvania.
Hey, Jim, thanks for being on the show tonight and representing Texas. So I'm really excited about this show, Jim. How you feel about it?
Well, I appreciate you calling me. The list of people you have on here, I need to step back and just listen to these guys, because you've got some really greats on here.
Well, I tell you what, if I need a fireman or a police officer, I'll call you, okay? I'll probably go in a few minutes, okay?
Or a stunt couple. I'm also a great stunt double.
Yeah, you're Dean Pyle's stunt double. Speaking of Dean Pyle, hey, Wolverine, where you at? Wolverine?
Yes, I'm right here.
Hey, man, I missed you all these months and weeks you working on the Coward, and I know you're still working
on
the Coward.
We're still working on it.
I know you are, but I missed you.
We got a little time because of the face mask thing. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other co-host I've had, he's still here too, is A.J. Perry. A.J., you there?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Man, hold on to your seat, man, because let me pick on you tonight, because you're on the Yankee here. I'm going to pick on you, buddy.
Wait a minute, I got to introduce people.
Wolverine, tell them to be quiet. Here we go. Okay, next up in 90% order is Mr. Shelvin Barnes. Shelvin, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Wow, I'm so excited you being on, because I heard you were a little badass in Texas in the 70s, and we're going to talk about that. And I mean that out of deepest respect, okay? I mean that, okay? And, you know, I only heard everything in the world about you, so I want you to be able to tell me and talk about some of that history, okay?
All right.
Okay, we're moving right along here. I've got a great, great friend, one of my cohorts, I call him, because together we're on the same road. Him and his brother run the Texas Martial Arts Hall of Fame, and their daddy, Larry Caster, was instrumental in sport karate in Texas, and he's a great guy. His name is David Caster. David, are you there?
I'm here, Gary. Thanks for having me.
Hey, David, I'm going to talk about the Hall of Fame here in a little bit, and I want you to tell me, you know, some things, what you guys are doing and what you've got planned, okay?
Happy to. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, moving right along here. Okay, Steve Ashcraft is one of those full contact fighters that you remember, but you don't remember. I mean, I remember Steve because he was a great fighter, but then I'm thinking about, who did he fight? Well, he fought everybody. I mean, he really did. He fought everybody. Steve, are you there?
Yeah.
Hey, buddy. Thanks for being on this show. And
I appreciate you having me.
Well, it's a live radio, Steve, so it's going to be really interesting. And if you got a question or something, you want to talk to somebody, just raise your hand up and go point. I'll do it, okay? Okay, here we go. Okay. Well, my special surprise guest was supposed to call in, and I guess he didn't make it. You know, I had two people. I had David LeBlue, who was supposed to call in, and Mr. Colbert Blackledge, who was a 3-time Golden Greek winner. But I did get Dr. Lee, Reginald Lee. Dr. Lee, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here. How are you doing today?
Good. Well, I'm going to bring you on about halfway through this show, and we'll talk about the hologram and the portals for Mr. Burleson and Mr. Stone and Mr. Steen, everybody, okay?
Definitely do that.
Cool. Now, who did I leave out? Anybody I leave out? Nobody? Cool. Well, I don't want to miss anybody. And like I said to David and Covert, I if you called in past 8:30, I don't know if you'll get on the air or not. But Dean, this is a jam-packed show. So I'm going to start with Mr. Garza. Mr. Garza?
Yes, sir.
Okay, now you're going to be roasted this in 2021 because they had to postpone it to January 28th and 29th, which we were going to do in September, but because of the Hilton, we had to postpone it. But how do you feel about that, getting on the pedestal and having people talk about your life and your career? Is that a little pressure?
Yeah, it's a little bit of pressure. I think it's, you know, definitely not going to be my comfort zone. I'll be out
well,
of my
comfort
zone.
Well, you have people that love you. They're going to be talking about you. Got Ismael Robles and your wife, of course, Cody, Mr. Falco, Gollibum, Troy Dorsey, George Minshew. I mean, they're going to – George told me he had a bunch of stories about you all the way, by the way.
Oh, you know. Is that right?
Yeah, he did.
Well,
yeah,
that's kind of – Yeah, that's, you know, I look forward to hearing the humor. I'm sure that it's going to, hopefully it'll stay light and not get too serious. I can
well,
sometimes get too serious with life.
Dean, you got to put a haka together for Mr. Garza this year, okay?
Okay. Yes, sir, I will.
Mr. Garza, do you know what a haka is?
Tell me what it is.
It's a tribute to a warrior. And Dean
fiery word.
Go ahead, Dean. Explain to him what a
haka is. It's fiery word. Yeah, it's a tribute. It's a warrior's tribute to run off enemies.
Cool. Look forward to hearing that.
Let me tell you something. He had Colonel Phil Torres, Daryl Stewart. Who else did you have, man? Rooster,
I had Kevin Bacon. I had Kevin Bacon and Jason Book. I had the most deadly haka war group probably ever assembled.
Wow. That's awesome.
I had John Morrison. So I had a group of highly decorated military individuals. So I had one of the deadliest war groups assembled doing the haka.
Well, Dean, let me tell you a little bit about Al Garza. To me, he was like dynamite. I mean, Al Garza was amazing. Now, Al, I'm going to pick on you a little bit. You were one of the guys that I remember. You would win your division, and then you had to fight Grant. And back then, it was you had some pretty big heavyweights. And you did pretty darn good, buddy, in your career. Now, the one thing that I really enjoyed about you was your sidekick. You just had this sidekick. It was incredible. Where'd you learn that from?
I learned it from Ismael Robles and Demetrius Havanas.
Now, you mentioned Ismael. Ismael's a world champion. How much is he a part of your life?
Oh, he was my instructor after 3 months of martial arts. I did martial arts with George Minshew. Flight Belt Academy first. Jimmy Tabaris was the actual instructor. And then I moved over to Galveston because my cousins, Benavideses, were training there. So, and then Grandmaster Robles was graduating from college at that time, and he came. And so he's been my instructor since 1975.
Pretty tough, yeah. Texas. AJ, you hear that? Pretty tough, Texas.
I did.
Yeah, okay, I'm moving right along.
Got a question for you, Gary.
I'll let you ask your question. Go ahead. I got a bunch of people here. Go ahead.
What makes Texans so tough?
Well, you listen. If you listen, you'll learn. If you listen, you'll learn. Okay, my next person is David Castor. David, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Okay, I'm gonna pick on you a little bit because you're kind of low key, but man, I love your history because I love your dad and your little brother. Is he your little brother or big brother?
He's my younger brother. He's bigger than I am.
Okay,
my
so you're
brother.
The old guy. Okay, now
Tell
me a little bit about the Texas Martial Arts Hall of Fame and what are you guys doing right now and who are this you're putting in a bunch of people this year coming up, and we'll talk about that. But when did you guys take over the Hall of Fame? What year?
Oh, it would have been 2010, I believe. We weren't the founders of it. Danny Passmore kind of founded it with a group of folks and did really well with it. He got us involved at some point as part of his board, and we started looking at some of the folks that he had, you know, had gone in and talked about. And as us growing up in Texas and around Texas martial artists all our life, some of these folks we never heard of before. So and the process of taking it over was, I mean, there are like first generation, second generation heroes. Well, I mean, like obviously Al Garza and Richard Manuel Robles, but even, I mean, I wouldn't consider them first generation. Maybe, you know, the Steens and the Burlesons and the Casters and those guys would maybe be first generation. But, you know, Kerbin I would just consider that group kind of a second generation as students from, you know, from some of those guys. But our deal is
he called me today,
we lost our dad. We lost our dad, and we realized after kind of going through the list that, you know, we're losing a lot of people, and a lot of our heroes growing up in Texas were not recognized by the Hall of Fame. And so our mission really is identifying these folks that are not in, that should have been in a long time ago, and kind of scrambling around trying to get these guys, you know, recognized. I mean, they're already recognized by their peers. They're already heroes and all of that. But we're not trying to be a popularity contest. This is we're just trying to honor crazy. Texas.
David.
Yes.
You do something crazy. AJ, listen to this. You don't charge people. You don't charge people to be in the Hall of Fame. That's outrageous now in America.
Well, we don't. I mean, and honestly, instead of, you know, trying to make money off of this. I mean, we're a nonprofit, and we want these people that are going in, we want their students to be able to attend, and their friends and their peers and their families to attend. And you can't do that when you're charging $70 a plate for a chicken dinner. So this is about the people going in and their families and their students and that type of, you know, camaraderie and that type of honor. It's not about, you know, charging a headcount or making any money out of it all.
David, you forgot to throw in the salad with the chicken dinner, buddy. But listen to me. You guys, you and Scotty are doing amazing and things. And a lot, I appreciate a few years back you allowed me to honor it. And, you know, this year you put in, what, Daryl Stewart, Pat Hardy, Glenn McMorris, rest in peace. Dennis Cox. Who else? Who did I leave out? James Stevens?
Yes, James Stevens.
Yes. And you're going to be looking for a location for that, and we'll be letting people know where and when that'll be. And David,
thank you
for being on the show tonight. And recently, you fought a full contact for what Waco and a benefit for Mr. Burleson against, what was his name? Steve Doss, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, now why would I know you're almost 50 years old. How old are you?
No, I'm almost 60. I'm closer to 60 than I am 50.
Okay,
but
that's even better. AJ, you listen to this now, you darn Yankee. Listen, why would a 60-year-old get in the ring, you know, with a Steve Doss, who is a proven full contact guy? Why would you do that, and how'd you do?
Oh, I mean, of course I won, but I mean, Steve, we've known Steve, and I have an ultimate amount of respect for Steve, but, I mean, why not? I mean, who gets an opportunity at 60 years old to do something like this in honor of Mr. Burleson and stuff? And, you know, we trained, we got in shape, and we knocked the piss out of each other, and that, you know, we enjoy it, and that's just, it's in your blood, and it's just something we love to do. So
that's
a no-brainer to me. It's a no-brainer to me.
Other? Is that what Texans say, knock the piss out of each other?
Well,
Gary,
I don't know. And then
go
have a beer afterwards, you know.
Gary?
AJ, go ahead. I was going to answer your question.
Oh, joking.
I got one
joking.
Wait a minute, AJ. One more. AJ, Dean, Wolverine, tell AJ to be quiet. Listen, one more Texan. This next young man, and I say young man, when he was known, he was a terror in the junior division. Jim Paschia backed us up. He was in the Fort Worth area. His name is Shelvin Barnes. Shelvin, are you there?
Yes, Shelvin? I'm here.
Okay, great.
Yes.
The first question I got to ask is not you, to Al Garza. Al Garza, do you remember Shelvin Barnes?
I remember the name.
Okay, cool. Well, Shelvin, tell me about some of what you did and who you trained with.
Well, to start off with, I started training in 1970 whenever I was 10 years old. My instructor was Chuck Lovin, who was one of J. Pat Burleson's black belts.
Oh, and, Chuck is a gentleman who went to Las Vegas and trained Charlotte Emerson. A lot of cool people, man. Yeah, I think he even trained Jim Paschia a little bit. Jim, did you train with Chuck Lovin too?
Yeah, I started in July of 1970. Shelburne was a green belt.
No.
He and
Jim,
his brother worked out. But, yeah.
Jim, now you and Shelburne know each other, correct?
We've been buds forever.
Well, good. This is great. So, Shelburne, tell me a little bit more about your career. What did you do, Shelburne? Go ahead.
Okay, so I was there with Chuck Lovin and made my black belt. Shortly thereafter, he went ahead and moved up to Oklahoma City to be with Jack Wong and teach for him. Then he finally went off to Vegas and opened a school there.
I honored Jack Wong last year right after he passed away, and Jack was my friend. He's a good guy. He's still the All-American. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. Shelvin, okay, here you go. How tough was Jim Paschia?
Well, at that time I was a kid, and every time he'd hit me, I'd bounce off of something.
Do what now? Say that again.
He'd hit me, and I would bounce. I mean, the school that we had tile floors, had haydock walls, concrete walls, and we had one wall that was sheetrock that they covered up with bamboo fencing. So instead of repairing the wall,
have you ever heard of the Paschia sidekick?
I think he's thinking that right there was probably something that Chuck Lovin taught him.
Okay, cool. Well, you know, he made it famous in his own mind. Now, Jim, I want to ask you a question. Jim, how tough was Shelvin Barnes?
I'll tell you what. When I first started, I didn't realize Shelvin was 10, but this has been a long time ago. I was like 18 years old when I started at Chuck Lovin's in July. It's been 50 years last month. And Shelvin and his brother were there, and they were green belts when I started, along with, Charlotte Hoffman Emerson was a green belt at the time. I don't know why I remember this, because I guess I was scared of everybody.
Well, you're old. How old are you now? You're what, 60, 70 years old?
69.
Okay, I'm sorry. I know you're old.
We were, they were kids, and we were rough on these boys. And Shelburne got tougher and tougher. By the time he was 14, you know, you couldn't hurt him, and he was hurting us, and we were grown. Now I'm going to tell you a story. Shelburne opened up a karate school on Riverside. You remember that, Shelburne. I went over there.
Okay.
And he wanted me to come and start working out with him. Well, Shelburne had filled out a bunch. He was a big boy. And I said, heck no, I'm not going to come over here, because he'd probably take it out on me what I was doing to him when he was younger.
Shelburne, did you beat up the old man? Is that what you did?
No, we just had fun.
Yeah. Well, I got another Texan guy. There you go. This young man, he was a top fighter in the full contact area, and he fought a lot of people, guys. And I'm real excited him to be on the show. This is Steve Ashcraft. Steve, you there?
Yeah.
Well, I've got a lot of representation of Texas karate tonight, from producers, promoters, and fighters, and full contact and point guys. And tell me some of the people that you've been in the ring with, Steve.
Bill Wallace, Ismael Robles,
I was trained by Greek, so I, at the beginning, well, about the first year, I was in karate.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Greek for a minute. Now, we're talking about Demetrius Stavanis. He was known as the Golden Greek. They got
I met him when I was 19. Well, he was 19 and a brown belt.
Okay. Well, he was killed in 1981, and before that time that he passed away, you trained with him, and he trained you, correct?
Yeah.
Cool. Now, did you have a record in the ring? What was your record?
I had 40 fights. I lost 5 and won 35 of them. I also had a boxing coach, Tony Ayala Sr. He was one of the best boxing coaches probably in the world. He was down here in San Antonio. He worked Ishmael's corner when I fought him 9 rounds for a title fight, a U.S. title fight. And he worked Ish's corner, and then after the fight, he came over and said, if you ever learn to box, you'll never lose another fight. And I went about a year or so. Finally, I got tired of getting my ass handed to me, so I went and learned how to box. And after that, after about 2 years, I trained with Tony about a year. I never lost another fight. Won like 25 of them in a row, so it's pretty good.
That's cool. Okay, AJ. AJ, you now have permission to ask your question. I've got a lot of texters on the air. And they talked about
when I
fight.
When I said what
was your question? What was your question?
No, when I said what makes Texans so tough? All joking.
Wait a minute. What did you just say? What makes Texans so tough? Well, I'll let any one of those guys answer that. Who wants to answer that? Who wants to answer that? Come on, somebody. You guys answer. Why don't you guys answer that?
I'd say it's the women.
It's the mosquito.
You ever dated any of our women?
No.
I'll tell you what. I'll make it easy. Let me go back to somebody that goes back to the old days. The old days, they understand. David Castor, let me talk to you, because your daddy was one of the guys that brought Kempo and brought the Texas Boxing Commission. I mean, you know history, so I'm going to ask you, David. What makes Texas so tough to answer that Yankees question?
You know what? It's just a mindset. It's just pride of just, learning and getting that shit beat out of you. Pardon my French. I'm sorry. Beating the heck out of you. And then, learning. I mean, it's a camaraderie in the way that we train.
What makes
and
me ask your
these
question?
Guys,
back
these guys were coming out
dad.
Of. I'm going back to these time frames is, you sit around and listen to a story from Jim Harrison or Alan Steen or Pat Burleson. They're not talking
David,
about tournaments.
David,
they're talking about
David,
street. They're talking
David,
about job.
David,
yeah.
David, let me ask a question. Okay, back in the day with your dad, Jim Harrison, Skipper, and, all those incredible guys. Mr. Daniel, what was it like back then with those guys, bare knuckle and knees and whatever? What was it like? Because you were the last of those guys.
It was competition. They loved each other and they hated each other at the same time. They hung out together. They would meet in Daniel's backyard on weekends and fight and drink and have a good time. And then they would go compete against each other. And they were not going to let each other, beat them. So it was very competitive. And it was.
That answers your question.
All joking aside, there's been a lot of rich history in Texas with martial arts. And
But I got to ask you a question, okay? Taekwondo is the same thing as Taekwondo.
No.
Taekwondo. Okay, it's the same thing, isn't it?
When they formed Taekwondo, it actually started 1965 Korea Taekwondo Association, and about 80% of the instructors came out of Tangsin on Murakwan because that was the biggest school in Korea. Grandmaster Hwang Ki was offered the first presidency of the Taekwondo, but he turned it down. And Taekwondo, it developed to be an Olympic sport. Taekwondo remained to be a traditional martial art. That's the biggest difference.
I always thought it was basically the same, but who am I? I'm an ignorant Hawaiian. So, anyway, Wolverine, listen, I want to ask you a question. Wolverine, you there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. When are you going to make the Wolverine style? I mean, they got Taekwondo, Tang-Soo-Do. They haven't got a Wolverine dough yet.
Well, you know, I don't get into that. But now, however, you know, when I was working with, you know, being brought up under Joe Louis, you know, he wanted us to not imitate, but to go forward and do more things and put things together. So, you know, training with him and a lot of other people like Michael D. Pasquale and different people and putting some of that together because, you know, Joe and Michael worked together a lot. And so we had a lot of people like Bill Wallace and people working and different things. And that's why we do the Valley Tudo. And, you know, we just call it Piles Valley Tudo. And the reason why is because I've been competing and winning and making sure that you know, what I'm doing is working on the competition circuit, not just for me, but for my students. And, you know, we have a very good record, but not just that. When USASOC and USAFIX cast a global net to find a combatives instructor for all the branches of special forces so that they have one person so that everybody's training the same thing. And because each branch has their own specialty skills, like Army combatives,
Wolverine. Yeah. Wolverine, bring you all technical. Let me just share with you something that's pretty cool. I remember back when if you were Okinawan, Japanese, Korean, or Chinese, and if you even mentioned American karate, they would look at you slant-eyed. They wouldn't like it. So, but now,
exactly.
Because of people like Ernie Lieb, Dan Anderson, Joe Corley, Sam Chapman, Mike Sellinger, a lot of cool people that Michael D. Pasquale, whatever, that created American martial arts. Now you can say American martial arts are the house of America in American karate. Because basically what America karate is taking the best of what they see that works, making it work. And that's what's really cool about, I feel, American martial arts. And I wouldn't be sarcastic, but I believe in Paul's, well, you know, because I believe in Joe Louis. I believe in his innovative attitude toward martial arts. Now, everybody, stay on the line because we've got Dr. Lee is going to bring about and talk about the hologram. This is going to be really interesting, guys, because it's going to include a portal for people like Mr. Burleson, Mr. Steen, Mr. Stone, and Mr. Wigginton. So this is very interesting. So stay on. We're going to be talking to you guys about the – I'm going to ask you guys to put a legend name game where I'll say names and you guys will tell me about them. But here we go. Dr. Lee?
Yeah. This is your long-lost cousin.
Go
I thought you forgot about
me. To everybody, go ahead and explain to everybody what the set VR is and then ask me when it's time to explain about the portals and the history generals. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I first want to congratulate you in regard to your first Zoom meeting this past Saturday. And on this Zoom meeting, my developer, Corset VR, self-defense training in virtual reality, was able to give additional insight on our interactive hologram. We recently added updates in regards to kicking and punching combinations, as well as knife attacks, to push the program further to maximize your practice platform in virtual reality. The attacks are spontaneous when you least expect it with random attacks.
You
the
sound
to
like
improve...
a doctor, Reggie. You know that? You sound like a doctor.
What's that?
You sound like a doctor.
This program is very interactive. They're very spontaneous, a very spontaneous program where the attacker will attack you when you least expect it. And this program is to help you practice to improve your accuracy, your timing, your speed, and your endurance. You'll be able to practice to evade and to place yourself in a position that will be optimal for you to neutralize an attack, to move angular, linear, and circular. You'll be able to develop muscle memory, hand-eye coordination, but for my goal, you'll be able to develop a reflex response to a stimulus to end the attack quickly. And that's what a lot of practitioners would like to do, is to end the attack quickly. So visit us at our website at setvr.app. We continue to be proud to endorse Professor Gary Lee and the Sports Karate Museum and the future platform for the History Portal. So, Professor Gary Lee, if you could please tell us about the History Portal.
Okay, guys, you got to get in the mindset. Now, remember the last Samurai movie where Tom Cruise gets off the train? He's in a village. Now, what we're going to do is create a village. And this will be a storefront village where you can actually go in and you can purchase things or, you know, you can shop. But you're going to be educated. You're going to get smart. You're going to learn about sport karate in America. You're going to learn who Alan Steen is. You're going to learn who Al Garza is. You'll find out people in martial arts in America that helped create it. And eventually you walk out to a forest like Okinawa, and there'll be waterfalls and tigers and all kinds of stuff. And then you'll see the hologram. You have to defeat it. And now the hologram can be anything. It can be a karateka. It can be a taekwondo fighter. It can be a Wing Chun dummy. It can be a judo player. Whatever. You got to defeat it. And you do, but you're getting smarter. You're getting all these questions and answers, and you're getting smarter in education and martial arts in America. And now Mako appears. Now, Mako was my sword instructor, and he was an actor back in the 60s and 70s. And he's gone now, but he's going to appear, and, you know, Wisdom Warrior. And he'll come up to you, and I'm going to pick on Al. He'll come up to Al and say, Al Garza, are you educated? And Al will go, yes. Well, then Mako will look in your backpack and all your questions, all of them weren't answered. He'll say, I'm sorry, Al, you have to go back. So now Mr. Garza has to go back, and he gets more education. More questions are answered to their American martial arts history. And now the hologram appears again. This time, it's a samurai. And he has the katana, wakasashi, and a tanto. And you have to defeat him with a kabuto weapon, something from Okinawa. And then Mako appears. And Mako says, okay, Al Garza, are you educated? Well, this time you are. You've answered the questions, and you're satisfying to him. He'll grab your hand. He'll take you through a gate. And there'll be the portals. Now, the first six are going to be Mr. Steen, Mr. Burleson, Mr. Stone, Mr. Rick Wigginton, and Mr. Jerry Smith. And you'll be able to walk in. These portals are things like they real estate people use to walk in to see a house or a room or something. But when you walk into Mr. Steen or Mr. Burleson's portal, the whole history of that particular person, from point A, when he met Mr. Reed in San Marcos, to where he created his empire of the Alan Steen dynasty, to present. And you'll get to learn everything about that particular history general. Now, we'll do all the history generals, but it'll take time. But here's the most important thing. You're going to be educated in an authentic history. And that's what we're going to do with these portals and the hologram. And I'm really excited about working with you, Dr. Lee. And you realize you're my long-lost cousin. You realize that, right?
Yes, we are. We're cousins.
Well, here's the thing. You're on the front line. How is it out there in the world?
The front line is pretty interesting. It's exciting in regards to being able to be out there and to be exposed to many things. You know that we're in the pandemic. And we're in the front lines. I'm in a scenario whereby we see a lot of scenarios whereby the pandemic and the virus is interesting because it's something that we really haven't really engaged in before. And that's what's happening right now. It's all new. It's evolving. And hopefully soon the pandemic will be over soon. Hopefully the vaccines will be out there and we can get back to a back to our own lives again.
Well, thank you, Dr. Lee, for being interested in the martial arts. Now, you have background working with Rick Wigginton, one of the fastest knife guys I've ever seen. Now, we lost him, but Rick Wigginton passed on a lot of knowledge to you. You studied, what, Wing Chun? Is that correct?
Yeah, I studied Wing Chun, Hung Gar. I studied under Professor Richard Wigginton, who is an amazing instructor, as you know. Richard Wigginton was a very, very skillful technician. He was also in the Marines. As I, if you mentioned in the past, a lot of martial arts came from the military. And a lot of people have learned martial arts because martial arts has evolved. And by going into the military, they were able to capture many, many arts and put it all together. So I was had the pleasure of spending a lot of time in training under Professor Richard Wigginton. His hands was very speed, very, very fast. He's very good in weapons, as you know. Professor Gary Lee has engaged and had mentioned, and they spoke together about weapons. And his hands was very fast. Not even, not only with unarmed combat with the hands, he was very, very fast with the blades. His he would pick up a knife and it would move so fast. It's like a fan moving in front of you. It was very, very skillful. Professor Gary, that you probably experienced it, have you not?
Well, he was very fast, but, speed is just a, just part of an extension of your hand with weapons. But, I've got some really interesting people here tonight. So, Dr. Lee, I'm going to ask some fighting questions, okay? Don't go nowhere, okay?
Okay.
Now, Al Gardner, Al, Al, you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, David, you fall in the same category, too, and I think, Steve, you fall in this category. You guys went from point karate to full contact. Were you crazy, or you just like the contact? Go ahead. Go ahead, Al. You go, and David and Steve.
Well, I think I just had some good influence with the people that I looked up to, Grandmaster Robles, Demetrius Savannis, just some of those guys that were the generation right before me. They influenced me.
Okay, I got to pick on you a minute because you did something one time that I can't remember if it was full contact or was point when you broke your arm and you won with back fists. Who was that you were fighting?
Well, I was fighting in a tournament,
Sensei,
in Joe Alvarado's tournament in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, I know it was Austin.
It was a point fighting tournament. Yeah, it was a point fighting. I don't know the guys' names. I don't remember them. What happened was, I broke it during one of the fights, and then I went to the corner, and the medic just said it looked like it was abnormally swelling, that he didn't know if it was broken or not. So I just kind of looked at the guy that I was fighting, finished, and I felt like I could still win. So I went back out, put my left arm between my legs, and fought with the one leg and one arm, basically. And
I know I
won that
there,
fight, and then won one more. And
yeah,
I was trying to go for the championship on the most points in the last two matches, but I missed it by a little bit. But I won the championship.
It was extremely, extremely cool. I mean, it really made me want to be a Texan big time. Now, David, you did the same thing. You were a point fighter, and then you became a full contact fighter. Why did you transform?
Oh, David who?
David Castor.
Okay,
why'd
sorry.
You transform?
You know what? I never competed at the level like Steve did and those other guys did. I was influenced by folks like Steve and Greek and Raymond and those guys. I mean, those, being around Dad who trained a lot of these guys, also, I looked up to him so much, so it was just kind of inevitable that, it's just
so
something I wanted to do.
But, yeah.
Yeah, cool. but like I said, not to the level Steve did, obviously, and so many others did. It was kind of, by the time I really kind of came of age, the mark, Full Contact was so saturated with, you know, the with different fighters and stuff. It was really kind of more on the decline when I kind of came of age at some point.
Let's pick on your brother a little bit. Now, Scotty, he's a sheriff, right? Or he's a...
Yes, he is with the sheriff's department.
He's an HPD or sheriff?
Sheriff.
Sheriff. And he's been that a long, long time, right?
Yeah, he has since he was 21,
yeah, now,
I think.
Scotty is pretty darn tough, too, but coming from his brother, I want to hear it. How tough is Scott Chapman?
Well, he didn't have a choice. I mean, he just didn't. It's just kind of the way we were brought up, and the folks that we were, you know, thrown or had to be with growing up. I mean, when you get around folks like Dimitri Savannis and Raymond McCallum and Roy Kerbin, and you're training with these guys and working out with these guys and just watching them in awe for so long, it's like, I mean, you just can't help it. I mean, it becomes part of your DNA.
Sure. Well, good answer. Now, Steve, I say to you, because you went from point to serious street fighting Full Contact. Now, why was your transition? Why did you do it?
Well, I was fighting my instructor after Greek couldn't come down from Dallas much anymore, and we're in San Antonio. And so Alvin Francis, I started working with Alvin Francis and doing tournaments with him and stuff. And then Greek called me and said, "Hey, we're doing the kickboxing, and we've got fights going on, and we're doing Texas ratings, and you know, and I would you be interested in it?" So we talked, and I started having fights here, and he started having them in Dallas, and of course Ishmael got involved, and so we started started the kickboxing. When we transformed from point karate to kickboxing, it was something new. It was exciting, and and it was something Texas boys loved. You know, I mean, we pretty much went hard, pretty hard at it in point karate too. So this just kind of gave us an outlet. And it was a ring. It seemed more professional, and it seemed like the next step for point karate. It is to get in a ring and have gloves on your hands and feet, and to kickbox, and that's how it happened. Demetrius,
well, you know,
I give him all the credit. Greek was probably the first one to ever fight. I mean, besides old Ed Daniels, he did a Joe Lewis fight. A kickboxing match once, but I mean, as far as like getting the ball rolling and actually getting the money and the backers, and I got a promoter down here, Tim Ford. Greek had his promoter, DK, and you know we kept in touch, he'd have a call. I'd go see his fights and stuff, and we'd meet in El Paso and San Antonio and Dallas and. It just seemed like the thing to do. Not everybody got involved in the kickboxing right away, but people, I mean, a lot of them did. Billy Jack Jackson, Raymond McCollum. I mean, there was a lot of people that followed suit and jumped right in. Ishmael
now,
jumped
Steve,
in. And
Steve,
and,
Steve.
Yeah.
You and I and Joe Corley are working on a movie called Once Upon a Time in Texas. That we like to do in January for the Al Garza roast. Now, this movie has a lot of cool people in it, but you tell me a little bit about it.
Well, it's Once Upon a Time in Texas. It's like, when I started in 1971, when I went to tournaments, there was no such thing as safety equipment or gloves. We just, it was bare knuckle. And it evolved to wearing gloves. And then from gloves, it was like, why don't we get in a ring and kickbox or do full contact karate? Not necessarily kickboxing like Thai boxing, but let's do full contact karate. And then next thing you know, we're in a cage and we're doing cage fighting, mixing jiu-jitsu and wrestling and boxing. you know, Western boxing and taekwondo, everything, just, you know, mixed martial arts. So what this movie's about is like all the pioneers like Joe Louis you know, Alan Steen, Pat Burleson, all the oldie, Chuck Norris, all of them, you know, from the 60s the early 60s and mid 60s, evolving into where they would go, Ed Daniels, you know, where they evolved from going, bare, you know, like bare knuckles, no equipment at all, just a cup and a mouthpiece, to evolving into, you know, shin pads, wearing foot pads, you know, helmets. Some people wore helmets. And then eventually, and
hey,
the contact
stop.
Got a little more.
Steve,
yep.
Steve, stop. Let me say something. Helmets weren't even regulated to be in Texas in 1984.
Do what?
Helmets, when you weren't required to wear helmets. Al Garza.
No, they people... Yeah, people
were
getting taken down,
listen,
and their heads were bouncing off the floor.
See,
yeah,
they weren't
yeah.
regulated to wear helmets in 1984 in tournaments.
Yeah,
that's
well,
when they regulated.
I'm just saying, but some people wore them, some people didn't. The deal is, it went from no equipment at all to wearing equipment, whether it was optional or, and then it got mandatory, and then it evolved into people getting in the ring, and you know. Wearing long pants and kickboxing, and a full contact
right.
karate.
Well, hold on,
and that's what the
hold
movie's about.
Minute.
It's about
hold
all
on.
The fighters who,
Steve.
Who,
Steve.
What?
Steve, I don't want to talk over
yep.
you. Hold on a minute. Okay, Wolverine, are you there? Wolverine.
Yes.
Okay, what year was it that you had to wear headgear in Florida?
Well, I don't know in Florida because I was from North Carolina.
Okay, what year in North Carolina?
Remember, I come down here after the military brought me down here.
Okay.
I'm thinking that it was I can't remember the year exactly.
Well,
Grandmaster
well,
Lewis,
we never
wore any headgear,
okay.
but down in the pork karate tournaments, I remember when they started making everybody wear the gear and it rattled like, you know, it sounded like it had.
Okay, we're not talking about gear. We're talking about headgear only. Okay, you guys don't listen to me. AJ.
Hey, Gary.
No, I don't
Gary.
Remember. AJ. I said I don't remember.
AJ.
Yeah.
AJ, listen. What year did Ohio make you wear headgear?
Well, I'll tell you something about Florida. I fought in the Taekwondo Regionals, qualified for Nationals, 1981. And we were we had to wear headgear. The hosu was chest protector was optional, but the headgear was mandatory.
In
yeah,
I think that's like I say, in North Carolina,
no,
it was around
karate,
1980 when they started
that
making
way.
Them wear headgear.
Yeah, I'm not saying open karate was that way.
See, the
hands you know,
and the feet were, listen, the hands and feet were one thing, okay, but the head was a different thing altogether. And in Texas, we didn't have to wear headgear until 1984. It was mandatory after that. Before that, it was optional because it was invented, I think, what, 73 or 74, you know, 10 years before Texas even acknowledged it. Al, am I right on that?
I believe you're right with the 84 as far as when it was invented. That I can't confirm.
Well, I'm sure
it was
around
71.
Well, but I tell you what it was. Mike Stone invented the headgear, or the handgear, and then June Reed took the idea and created an empire with it. That's a true story. I mean, Mike told me that in the office of the museum when he came in from the Philippines and came to the grand opening. So, you know, Mr. Reed created the empire, but Mike Stone invented
right.
the handgear. Yeah.
Yeah, he was credited for inventing the gear.
Yeah, the hand gear changed everybody's. I mean, tell me, guys. We got a few minutes. Tell me, how did the hand gear affect you guys? Anybody want to talk about that?
This is Paskey. I hated the hand gear because I've got really skinny, bony knuckles, and the hand gear wouldn't let me punch him hard enough to where you could sink it in and hit him in the heart.
Well, I tell you,
much. I like the hand gear.
Jim, Jim, I'll tell you guys a funny story. Yeah, I was with Sam Chapman when it was invented, and I hated it. I hated the hand gear, and I would fuss and bitch about it all the time, okay? And finally, Sam says, listen, I'm tired of you fussing. I'll put a notch in your hand gear every time you knock somebody down or you knock the wind out of somebody. Well, I said, well, how many notches do I have to have? He said, well, every five notches, I'll buy you dinner. And I said, Sushi? He says, anything you want. Well, when I left Sam, I had 14 notches in my hand gear. And I hand gear was hard. I didn't like it. Did anybody else have a problem with hand gear? David, I know you fought bare knuckle forever. Did you like the transition to going to wear hand gear?
You know what? Yeah, I mean, we fought bare knuckle and stuff. I remember when the hands first came out, it was still optional. And I was fighting Pee Wee Division in Oklahoma. And the rules were if you wore headgear, as you could make head contact as a kid. I thought it was awesome, man. I just begged my dad, hey, buy me some headgear because I want to kick and punch to the head as a Pee Wee. And there wasn't headgear around. But that's about the time I want to say 74 when that.
Yeah, 74 when people were experimenting with it. Now, Shelburne, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Now, you always use hand gear all through your career, correct?
No.
No?
No.
Okay, I heard that was Patsy. Did you and Patsy ever go bare knuckle with each other?
Oh, many times. Many times.
I didn't get it. You guys do it or not?
Safety around our knuckles.
We still train bare knuckle. I mean, we still spar bare knuckle.
I know you do, David, but I'm talking about Shelburne and Patsy. You guys can fight bare knuckle too? Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
I never fought Shelburne with any hands there.
Oh, really?
No.
Hey, AJ, did you fight bare knuckle back in the Tenkudo, Ohio days?
We didn't use any gear. We used foam elastic stuff on our shins. But, you know, for years we didn't use any gear. And it wasn't until, like I said, you know, the AAU Taekwondo started making you use the headgear that started coming into play. And then point karate, it started getting real heavy in the 80s.
Yeah. One of the first tournaments I remember seeing the foam gear was the top 10 nationals up in St. Louis, Missouri. And,
can anybody, I know I can't because it's my job to do this, but can you guys tell me some of the companies that made headgear and hand gear besides? Well, go ahead. Can you name some of them? Don't talk all at once, guys.
I think Bear Brand had their brand.
Bear Brand.
Correctly.
I remember Bear Brand was the first. And then
that was
he
up
had,
in Chicago.
Yeah, Unry, Macho, Cresco. Yeah, Pro-Tech, Macho.
Wolverine. Didn't Wolverine have it? There's
Wolverine, yeah. Who else, guys? Come on.
Century.
We got to have Century in there. Yeah, Century. Who did we forget?
Like,
come on, historians. Who did we forget?
Gary did ask. I can remember the first time I saw hand gear used. I was in Dallas, Texas.
Hey, I got that beat. I remember when we used to have dye parties, and they dyed the white belt green and brown, and the black belt, you couldn't buy it. You couldn't. You had to be handed me down through the instructor, and you couldn't buy belts. Unless you went to Chinatown in San Francisco or New York, and you could buy them in little Chinese stores, but you couldn't buy colored belts anywhere. You had to dye them. Anybody remember the party?
We never got colored belts.
We passed them down.
Passed them down, yeah. Well, how'd they get that color in the first place? Come on, man.
Somebody dyed them.
They had to dye them. They didn't buy them. Unless you guys were training in the early 80s, I mean, back in the early 70s, You couldn't buy belts.
Well, you went to the store, and on the soap aisle they had red dyes.
Yeah.
There you go. Or we green got a pot dye.
And a pot of boiling water.
Belt.
And a pot of boiling water. You're right.
I'm going to blame you guys.
Yeah.
I'm going to blame the Tang Soo guys and the Koreans creating all those colors in the belt. Because in the beginning, it's just white, green, brown, and black. And then you guys came to America.
That was short of time. Then they made
it was you guys. You guys changed your brown belt to red belt. And
right.
Jap slapped all the Japs. Because the highest ranking Japanese karate is a red belt. That's what you guys did, the Koreans.
Right.
Okay. So anyway, that's another story. Anyway, you guys have been really great tonight. We've had a fun show. Now, I'm going to tell you, if they want to get in touch with you, David, and the Texas Martial Arts Hall of Fame, how would they do it?
Best way through the Facebook site, Texas Martial Arts Hall of Fame, or they can contact me directly through Facebook or by text.
Very good. Now, if you're in San Antonio and you want to get in touch with learning about kickboxing or, you know, talking about how to fight, you can get in touch with Steve Ashcraft. How do you get in touch with Steve? Go ahead.
You can go on the internet, www.ashcraft.com. Or call us 210-344-4272.
There you go. Now, moving right along. Dean, if they want to get in touch with Bao Tudo or get involved with anything down in Florida, how would they get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with you, or they can go to Elite Combat Martial Arts on Facebook, or just to my Facebook, Dean Piles on Facebook. And get in touch with me there, or they can call me at area code 850-368-1552.
Wow, great. Now, Dr. Lee, one more time, anybody wants to try out the Set VR and learn about the Oscar's Quest and the new adventure that we're going to be doing with the portals, how they get in touch with you?
Yes, you can go to our website at setvr.app. Or at my website, my email, reginald.lee@setvr. You can reach me that way.
Super, super. Now, Mr. Garza, we're going to be honoring you January the 28th and 29th that we've rescheduled from September the 25th. Now, you have, what, three schools? I think your son runs two or one.
We both work at all three schools, but mostly we work out of – Cody works out of the Dickinson School, and I visit all the schools.
So if anybody's in that Dickinson, Board Galveston area, and they want to get in contact with you, how would they get in contact with Val?
Well, I'd like for them to contact me directly. It's 281-731-9277. And I can direct them to what would fit their needs the most.
Well, I appreciate you so much tonight, you opening up in prayer and sharing your faith with me and everybody that you share with. You're such a blessing to all of us. Now, Jim Paskey and Sherman Barnes, I know you guys don't have school, but here's the deal. I'm not going to ask you guys to give your phone number or anything. But, here's the deal. I love you guys, and you understand why I won't do that. Because, Sheldon, you got a civilian job now. And, Jim, you live in a hangar, correct?
An aircraft hangar, yeah.
Yeah, you live in an aircraft hangar, and your team piles. It's not double. And so I don't want anything to happen to you.
Okay.
So,
I'm not going to blame you. You're not going to milk toast. Dean, do you hear me?
Well,
I'm not going to say milk, toast.
You're not going to drink milk and toast or eat milk and toast?
No, I'm not going to say anything about milk toast.
What is milk toast? Is
that's
that like
right.
Jock's?
That's right.
What is that? What is milk toast?
That's because I have to get up and compete, so I can't hang out with Mr. Paskey. But I'm gonna do that. I'm not gonna compete this time. I'm just gonna hang out with Mr. Paskey all night long and you know, get some life lessons under the belt, you know.
Yeah, I have to have kind of like a pork chop bone to get a dog to hang out with me. I put a bottle of bourbon around my neck to get friends.
you guys are too funny. I'm so glad I hooked you guys up at the Legends, because, see, that's the reason why, you know, I'm doing Owls in January, because I want to be a first of the year type of event. People look forward to Cotter Wars and the gathering, and everybody feels comfortable. I mean, that's important. So having relationships like Jim Paskey and Dean Powell create, and so many others, that's the reason why we do what we do. And we thank you again every week for listening to us on Tuesday night. And guys, I mean it from the heart. David, Steve, everybody. Jim, Shelburne, I mean, golly bump. And we missed J.B. LeBlue and Colbert Blackwood tonight, but God bless them. And this was the Texas show without a doubt. So God bless you guys, and we'll see you in January, okay?
Alex.
Take care, Gary. Thank you.
Thank you. Bet. And AJ, I don't care what anybody says. I like you, okay?
Thank you, Mr. Lee.
Even though you are Yankee. Even though you are Yankee, I love you.
Even though I'm a Yankee, huh? Have a good night.
All right. Good night,
have
everybody.
A good night.
Mahalo and aloha.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, all
y'all. Right. Goodbye, guys.
Goodbye. Glad to talk to you.